OG Podcast Network presents.
Welcome to Fireside. First off, welcome to Fireside. We'll be talking comic books the entire time. Ain't going nowhere, so dry your eyes. Already lasted longer than Firefly. Stay tuned, Mindy's got the creepiest news. From books to TV, the movie reviews. Plus the next toy, baby, here we choose. Even the superhero fight club, we usually lose. So pop in those earbuds, turn up those speakers. Feel Mama's power, Earth 2 with features. And either listen by weekly or you can binge us. We got it all, baby.
Are there ninjas?
So relax and lie back as we start another issue of Fireside Chats. Comic facts and wise cracks. Welcome to the show, this is Fireside Chats.
Beep you.
Hey, Firesiders. I know this is not your normal schedule for us, not being a Wednesday or a Saturday, but we felt as though we should do an issue in memoriam of Steve Ditko. So joining me today, as always, are my wonderful sidekicks. First, Mr. P Features. Hello.
Hello, Internet.
And then we have Mr. Maurer.
It's only fitting for Ditko that I give a big beep you.
It's fair. We'll get into why that's fair in a second. But we're also we're joined by Baby Huey.
What's going on?
What's going on? Let's remember Steve Ditko. So first, Maurer, who is Steve Ditko? For anybody who's new, maybe hasn't heard that name before, maybe saw the name but doesn't know what it means and why it's so important to the comic community, because the outcry after he sadly passed was amazing.
Who is Steve Ditko? Depends on who you ask.
That's a fair answer.
If you ask a comic fan, he is the co-creator of Spider-Man and Doctor Strange and all kinds of amazing characters. If you ask Stan Lee, he was one of his beloved co-creators after the fact. But back in the 60s, they were arch nemesis after having a falling out of who gets right to what. If you ask other creators, he was a great role model. If you ask newscasters, he was an asshole.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
So as comic fans, though, I think we put him just in that legend.
Well, and he's legend because of, he wasn't on Spider-Man for all that long. It was like 40 some issues. But what he brought to Spider-Man was huge. Amazing Fantasies moving on into the Amazing Spider-Man.
Well, it's funny for me, Ditko is Doctor Strange.
Yes.
Like the Ditko drawing, all that surrealism was his style. And I love that they put that in the Doctor Strange movie.
And the funniest thing about that is the fact that he's not a hippie, but the hippies loved him.
Yes, they did.
The hippies loved that man. That psychedelic kind of look that he gave it, that just came out of his brain, as he says, is interesting because, the psychedelic culture, that counterculture loved him, and he was not a fan.
Well, like you said, it just came out of his brain. He always said he could never tell you what inspired him in the moment. He was a freelance artist, and that's all that he really did. For him, it was, okay, I have to draw this thing. I like drawing. He grew up in Pennsylvania. He went through the Depression. Art was kind of his outlet.
Features. When you think of Ditko, what is, like, so you got Maurer who goes to Strange. I definitely go to Spider-Man. Where's your brain go?
Spider-Man.
What do you think his ultimate contribution is besides, Spider-Man?
Honestly, the ultimate contribution is being the co-creator of so many amazing characters. Just being there for that without him. Without him, we wouldn't have those pieces of our childhood that we actually cling to, or even still to this day.
So I agree.
I think that is a major part of Steve Ditko, and especially as to where the comics are today.
I think when you look at, especially when you look at Spider-Man, when you go back and you look at old Steve Ditko Spider-Man, and even before that, when you look at superhero comics and you look at the city, you know what I mean? That it was just kind of something that was there. Like Gotham was a place and it had a feel to it, but it was just a cityscape, right? Metropolis. But what Steve Ditko did, which was unique, was the fact that how Spider-Man was interacting with the city almost gave it its own feel. And it was very almost claustrophobic in a way, right? So he gave the entire landscape a voice that didn't usually have. It was just the setting. But with him, it was an intricate part of what made those original Spider-Man books great.
Well, and the weird thing about his art is it wasn't the most detailed, but also extremely detailed at same time.
Absolutely.
Like, it had this weird dichotomy of not being the best art, but super detailed. Like, Baby Huey, one of your favorite features of Spider-Man is Ditko, the little web wings underneath of it.
Right. And we got to see that finally in Homecoming.
And that's one, you know, that little detail.
You're right. When you think of Steve Ditko art, like, especially when you compare it, Kirby and Ditko are like the two big names that you hear a lot. And when you look at the two of them, I wouldn't put it up there with Kirby, but what I would say that he has that I think that Kirby didn't quite have was the expressiveness. Like, everybody looked, not like they were in pain, but they were always extremely expressive. Like, the faces on everybody in any of those panels, you could easily tell what they were going through. Do you think?
Well, yeah. And that's what Stan Lee loved about him, is he gave characters, you know, a fragileness to their being.
Sure, yeah.
He gave them, you know, what...
I love that, fragileness to their being.
What could really be a person with those powers or in that in situation, where Stan Lee was all about the fantastical and we needed to pop. Without Ditko, you wouldn't have what you love most about Spider-Man, which is Parker.
Yeah, okay, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Ditko provided a feeling to all these characters, I think. And I think that was more important of him than what we got out of, you know, Stan or just Kirby himself.
Well, everybody kind of emulated the style afterwards. I mean, Spider-Man became huge. I mean, he was everything. So, and a lot of people, I mean, they said the sales when Ditko left after like the 40-some issue or whatever number it was, they dipped. I mean, people were interested to see what the first one was because everybody always is. But then right after that, they started to go down. And what was crazy about Steve Ditko, especially in that era, is that because he was only on Spider-Man, but for so long, and then Doctor Strange and things, is that he just up and left.
Yep.
Like he just literally handed in his pencils, right, his pencil work, and then just said, all right, I'm out, I'm done. He quit to like the receptionist. Like, he just was like, all right, I don't know who, I'm just going to give you this, and I'm done, by the way.
Well, so there's a lot that goes into that, and I guess we can talk about when he and Stan started working on Spider-Man. Stan had basically the whole idea thought out. And he said, this is what I want you to do. And he would give Ditko plot points. No script, just plot points. And then Lee would go back later and add in the words.
That's how he wrote so much. That's how Stan Lee was on so many books back then, is that he really just went, here's the gist of the story, and I'll fill in the rest afterwards.
But then it got to the point where he trusted Ditko so much, and this is where I don't think this side of Stan gets talked about much. Where he then said, you know what, do your own thing with the storyline, draw what you want, and I'll come back in and put the words in.
Absolutely. I love that you brought that up. So in the Amazing Spider-Man 34, but more recently, when we saw the Spider-Man Homecoming movie, the scene where he's lifting all the cinder blocks and stuff that fell on him, that was a Steve Ditko piece. And that piece was so incredibly done that had no dialogue. There were no word bubbles. It was three pages straight of Spider-Man struggling to lift the machinery, whatever that was that fell on him.
And that was specifically done so Stan wouldn't get a chance to put words on it.
But then Stan did. That's why there's a lot of...
Wow.
It's such an iconic moment. It's to a point where I think that is a defining moment of Peter Parker. That's not a defining moment of Spider-Man to me. That is a defining moment of who Parker is. That's why, even in the movie, when they did the tribute to that scene in the movie, that is hands down the best part of that movie to me.
Yeah.
Do you think?
Well, yeah, that's
definitely,
not only was it a cool throwback to, you know, the classic comics, but it showed more than just a teenage angst movie or a superhero movie.
Yeah. To fail and to overcome. It's incredible.
You know, showing how fragile Peter was.
But those are the reasons we like a lot of these characters. And
he gave us that reason. Like, that's one of those scenes that will always live on. Like, I mean, Ditko's work is going to always live on, right? The design, everything. But the
feeling?
Yes. Yes. Watching Park. And even when you look at those three pages, how the panels change. Right. So when you look at the first couple panels, when you look at the first page, they're small squares. Mm. Right. And it's just him struggling. And as he gets more confidence and as he decides, OK, I'm going to finally do it, I'm going to lift it, you see the panels all get larger until it's a full page spread of him throwing the thing off. beautifully done. And like, I think that paved the way for people to look at how you even lay out a page differently.
Yeah, his layouts were definitely...
Because layouts back then were just like square, 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 square,
splash,
square, splash, square, square, square.
Well, they came from the comic strip world.
Right.
Right.
All of those artists were like comic strips. We go four panels, then down, four panels, then down. And we all love Steve. Let's talk about his legacy a little bit. And let's talk about, you know, the dichotomy. You have people like Neil Gaiman who love him.
Oh, he's beyond Neil Gaiman. You got the comic world. There's, you'd be hard pressed to find somebody who will say something negative to what he added to the comic world. Maybe him, because again, wasn't the nicest guy.
Well, and he didn't. when you asked him about his history, he said, "I don't want to look at what's in the past. Is in the past. I'm always looking for what's next." Because remember, he was a gun for hire, and I think that got soured when Stan, who was the boisterous, you know, mouthpiece for everything, you know, Steve never wanted the credit and never wanted his name anywhere. But when it got taken away from him, he got upset. And I think he went down that other path completely. Okay, they don't want to give me credit. I don't want to talk to them when they want to come, you know, run into me.
Well, I think, I mean, I'd be honest with you, I think it's more than that. I mean, that man's a recluse.
Yeah.
I mean, no. For anybody unaware, he is not the outgoing type whatsoever. It's no funny, pictures. Actually. First, there's like four pictures of the man.
Yeah.
You can't find photos of him.
Past what, 1970?
And then the one draw, I think something like that.
Yeah.
The one drawing that they used for him in the, remember the Marvel Mary Marching Band or whatever the hell it was called? What was the song called? I don't know. I'll find it. We'll put it in the, anyway. At that time, Stan, because Stan is Stan, tried to think of new ways to kind of promote Marvel. Because, I mean, he was good at it. But he created a song with all the different artists and writers at the time who were in the Marvel bullpen.
Yeah.
The only voice not on that record is Steve Ditko. They say, oh, Steve just flew out the window because he didn't want to be recorded. But no, he just wanted nothing to do with it. And I think that speaks heavily to who he was. And that's before they had their falling out. Like, a lot of people believe the falling out was over the Green Goblin.
Oh, the rights
No, not the rights. A lot of people believe that Steve Ditko did not want the Green Goblin to be someone that Parker knew.
Mm.
Right? He didn't want him to be Harry Osborn because he said his whole thought is, what is the likelihood that your arch nemesis is going to be some random, is going to be somebody important in your life more than just a random guy on the street? So Stan was the one who said, no, we're going to change that. That's going to be Norman Osborn. It makes more sense for drama. It doesn't make as much sense to just have it be random Joe Schmo number four.
Well,
he was right.
Kind of, I mean, agree, look, with Stan.
Here's the thing with Stan. I agree mostly with Stan when it comes to Steve Ditko, but that does not change the importance and the relevance of Steve Ditko.
Oh, yeah, no.
Does that make sense?
No doubt.
That makes sense?
And yeah. I feel like a lot of people almost like put a lot of the Lee Kirby stuff onto the Lee Ditko stuff. Like the Lee and Kirby issues, they had a lot more to fight over.
Yes, way more.
Steve Ditko and Stan Lee didn't really have as much to fight over. They had a big blowout. He said, peace out. He went to DC for a little bit. Then he retired, and then he just did.
Well, he made up. He wanted to make his own thing.
He did an indie thing.
He did
a few things.
I mean, people afraid me. He made the question.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, Mr. A.
Mr. A. Yeah. Well, no, he made the question.
Yeah, the question was him, too.
Mr. Okay. A was his, like, that's my baby.
Right.
Right. And that's when you start to really see, like, the harshness of Steve Ditko.
Mm.
When you look at the moral compass, we'll say, of Mr. A, which there is, like, he almost looks like new Moon Knight,
mm-hmm.
you know, minus the mask. He just has, like, he's an all white dude, all white suit,
yeah,
right. And then he would give you a card, and half of it would be white and half of it would be black. And he said, there is no gray, there's no middle ground, you're either good or you're evil. So, what was interesting about Mr. A is that he would beat the shit out of you if you just like pickpocketed, like, you would lose limbs.
Sounds
for
like
the
Mauer.
Smallest thing, and you know what. that's the new hoodie. The new hoodie is yeah. Mr. Okay. M. Mr. M.
Hey.
But that Mr. A was a brutal character.
Well, and the question, I mean, if you look
too,
at well, the question not only was brutal, but that also went into a little bit of his conspiracy and his noir.
Well, he was also heavily influenced by the Spirit. So the Spirit was a
Eisner.
It was a newspaper comic. Wasn't it? Yeah. And that's what he was inspired heavily by, that, especially when it came into the question.
I love the question. watching the question on the Justice League cartoon got me to go back and read all the old question books.
Anyone want to give a question breakdown?
Well, it's a form of a sentence that you ask.
And a one. Yeah. But no, like you already touched on it. He was a conspiracy theorist.
Detective.
He is a detective, yeah. He was almost never wrong.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, he delved deep into conspiracy theories of the main Marvel or the DC villains.
And he had no face.
Yeah, you probably had no face.
Yep.
He was like the
color changing suit with the gas.
Wait, I need to hear this analogy. He was like what?
The blank on Dick Tracy.
Okay.
You thought you guys were going to get Earth 2 out of me this time, didn't you?
Normally at this point in the show.
Yeah, we're 15 minutes in and you only got a baby one. I mean, I'm saying. Track record's not in your favor, bro. But yeah, I mean, so other things. So question, Mr. A. He made a really strange character named the Creeper.
The Creeper?
I love the Creeper.
No, you didn't. Nobody loved the Creeper.
No one loves Creepers.
He loves the Creeper.
Do you really love the Creeper?
This speaks volumes. I like Huey. It.
The Vines. Creeper is he's a DC character. He didn't last long. The Creeper.
He was in Batman the Animated Series.
Was he really?
Season 4.
Wait a minute.
Give us a breakdown of the Creeper.
There's not much.
Yeah.
There's not much behind him.
Creeper.
He's a creepy dude. He creeps. He has green hair and he wears like a lion's mane around like as a vest, right? He's orange.
Yellow?
And
yeah. Orange
he
or yellow.
Just laughs and beats people up. Like,
he's
that's
a Scooby-Doo villain.
He is a Scooby-Doo villain.
Pretty much.
He is a Scooby-Doo villain.
And he would have gotten away with it too.
It wasn't for that Medlin Lee.
that was a funny point. It was just like somebody asked Ditko if it was the Green Goblin controversy is why he left Marvel. And he goes, I wasn't talking to Lee at that point. So no.
And, you know, if you watch, you know, any kind of documentary or read anything about Ditko, you know, he stopped doing interviews. He didn't want to talk to anybody.
Right.
He just wanted to draw, create art, and move on.
Yeah.
He did all the way up into the 90s.
His thing was,
until he died, that man was making art. That man was making books.
Well, yeah. His thing was his work will speak for itself.
Yes.
So, and I agree. You know, some people are like that. You don't. Well, there comes a certain superstardom, like stardom, that comes with the job or
but
the
see,
work.
He didn't care he didn't about want that. Any of that.
Yeah.
Now, this was a man of the art more than a paycheck.
Right.
Well, I love that, you know, he was like, oh, I've done tons of interviews. No, you haven't, bro.
No.
You never gave interviews.
You've done like. You know,
he did some, but you never hear about it.
Five, maybe.
No, yeah,
he's like Prince.
And if somebody talks to him for an extended period of time, he'll go, "Hey, by the way, everything we just said never happened." Yeah, that was. I mean, it was a whole thing with him.
Your recording will self destruct.
Everybody knew where he lived. He just never answered the phone. Didn't you know?
There was a great documentary called "In Search of Steve Ditko." I'll put the link in the show post for this. Mm. And it's phenomenal. It's about an hour long. It's worth your time. But one of the interesting things about that is, I'm spoiling the end here, is the whole documentary just talks about Steve Ditko. And then at the end, they want to talk to him. Mm-hmm. So they finally track him down and they literally are outside of his offices in New York. And they call him and they go, yeah, I'd love to do an interview. And then he goes, no, there's no, he goes, no way I can entice you. Not, no, no. Okay. All right, well, thank you for your time. And then they hang up and he goes, all right, let's just go in. So they go up and they knock on the door. They're up there for like 20 minutes and they come back down. They go, it was a great time. He's a nice guy. He gave us a bunch of comics. He was with Neil Gaiman. And he said, they go, I can't tell you a thing we said, though. We promised him we wouldn't.
The perfect antisocial, you know, person that has literally influenced millions of people.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, it's so funny. He influenced people he had no interest in influencing. That's the kind of guy we're talking about. The whole counterculture thing, I know we blew past that, but his influence on Doctor Strange is a big deal. Like, in Doctor Strange's look, feel, vibe, all of that is a Ditko thing. To a point where it was actually in a Marvel, like, anthology thing where Marvel printed that it was more Ditko than anyone else. Doctor Strange... although co-created Doctor Strange, they damn near said, yeah, Steve Ditko created Doctor Strange.
Hmm.
You know, in print. I'm like, this isn't something that like is hearsay. That's printed in a Marvel book.
Yeah, because with Doctor Strange, his look is a good majority of him. Like, all about him, you know, it's very simple. He's a sorcerer. Okay, move past that.
Right.
The actual character is all the visuals that went with it. So when you look at what he looks like in the worlds that he goes into and all the different things there, that's more of who he is than any writing that anything could happen.
Well, people would talk about like how his hands were, like that was a big deal. Yeah, you would think, I mean, maybe he got that from his time on Spider-Man too.
Probably. I mean, he did a lot of.
But he was really into small detail like that. So as Maurer was saying before, there's not a lot of detail, but there's a whole lot of detail. Something as small as just where their fingers were.
Yeah.
You know, where them you got your what's his name? I can't look at Maurer because I know the moment I say something that's somewhat risque in Maurer's brain, he's trying so hard.
Maurer looked at me and I started laughing, and then he started laughing.
I caught it.
It's on me.
It'll be all of you. Mine's out of the gutters, gents.
Hey.
Anyway, when you look at somebody like that who puts so much emphasis and focus on just the placement of the fingers, then you move into someone like. Oh, now I can't think of his name. Rob Liefeld, who got a problem with feet. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't care where the fingers are. Just hide them behind something else.
And he doesn't have hands. Just wrap him around again.
Don't get me wrong. I think Rob Liefeld still is, I mean, to what he was to 90s comics is a very big deal. So I don't want to downplay Rob Liefeld here. But
oh, yeah, no.
I want to just, but that comparison, I think, is interesting to where his mind state was when he was drawing.
Liefeld, when he was, no hands, no feet, no waist, just pockets.
Or and giant chest.
Pouches and shoulder pads.
Actually, and that pouch character is an actual thing, by the way.
Wait, what?
Rob Liefeld made a character named The Pouch, who's literally head to toe pouches.
And his gun is made of pouches that shoots pouches.
Oh my God.
Everything about him is a pouch.
Oh yeah.
It was a joke and then it became real.
It happened.
Let's stop there. So let's talk also, we didn't get a chance to really go into this, but let's talk about his time at DC, because that was a big deal too. I mean, first Hawk and Dove, who's going to get their big screen debut or small screen debut in Titans.
Mm-hmm. Right? Hawk and Dove was DC? I always thought they were Marvel. I don't know.
No,
why.
Marvel Cloak was Cloak and Dagger.
Right. Hawk and Dove was like their
copy.
Their back and forth. Dagger. Yeah.
But yeah, Hawk and Dove. You got something?
He was about to say that's a copy.
That's a copy.
10-4. It's a copy.
Well, so and who's got a Hawk and Dove breakdown? For anybody unaware of who we're talking about.
So Hawk is superhero duo, Hawk and Dove. Hawk was the guy, clearly, and he was a white and red suit. Mask looked like.
This also ties into his only good or only evil thing. Like, Hawk and Dove are his two sides.
Whoa. Right. Wait, Dove started off as a guy?
Yeah.
Wow, I did not know that.
You don't remember the old cartoons?
I remember Dove being a girl.
Anyway.
That was later.
Wowzers.
Digress. What do they do?
Yeah, they fight crime as a pair. There's a Hawk and there's a Dove. Dove being the...
But Dove calms down Hawk. So Hawk is like a rage machine.
Yeah. Right? So the strength is there and the finesse is with Dove.
And Dove's the hippie.
Yeah.
And he also helped co-create the second Blue Beetle. So the Ted Kord is a Steve Ditko. I know. Features has like the weirdest list of favorite
superheroes. I like Battle Chasers.
Spider-Man 2099 and Ted Kord.
Yeah, I like Ted Kord too. I'm with the features.
Right, who's Ted Kord for anybody who's unaware of
the second Blue Beetle?
And who is the second Blue Beetle?
Ted Kord.
Which is
the Blue Beetle.
Give me more.
What more do you want?
Who is Blue Beetle?
What does he do?
He fights crime. He's a scientist and a kind of detective.
So I want to unplug his mic.
What?
Do we really need them? You keep telling me.
He's a genius level.
We'll talk about it later.
Okay. Yeah, genius level intellect, fights crime.
He's a creator, inventor.
Does he have the scarab?
No. That's the third Blue Beetle.
By the way, this Blue Beetle was that was the first Blue Beetle. Was the copy of Green Hornet.
Yeah.
And this Blue Beetle was the one where he started becoming friends with Booster Gold.
Yes. Ted Kord and Booster Gold.
This is the one
was the good cop
who got his ass handed to him by Doomsday.
Yes.
Yeah.
Didn't he die? From Doomsday or just got really beat?
No, he got thrashed.
Beaten badly.
Got thrashed. Really bad.
That was the house and stuff.
Yeah. That was my first introduction to Blue Beetle.
Hold on. Did anybody ever think Blue Beetle would even be able to stand up to Doomsday?
No.
That's C or D rate character.
It was the 90s Justice League. Well, Guardian was on that team.
Yeah.
So was Guy.
Yeah.
Ooh. Which isn't standing up to Blue Beetle. Or is it to Blue Beetle? Yeah. No, he probably stand up to Blue Beetle.
Hand to hand, he wouldn't.
I'll give that to Guy. I'm not going to give Guy much, but Guy gets that one.
No, I mean, if it was a fist fight, then Ted Kord's whooping on Guy.
By the way, that is the third Green Lantern. Right? Was Guy second? Or Guy was third? Guy was third, or was it John Stewart third?
Guy was third.
Guy was third. So Alan Scott, Hal Jordan, then Guy Gardner.
Yep.
I'm proud of you.
Yes.
Nobody cares.
That I'm proud of him.
Yeah, nobody cares. Nobody cares about Guy Gardner or his pride in me.
We care about Guy Gardner.
By we?
Me, Maurer.
Baby Huey.
Baby Huey. Wow, Baby Huey. Jeez.
So, I mean, but think about that. I mean, that he's heavily involved in what made Marvel great.
Yeah.
And then goes over to DC and still creates some household names that we talk about now. Like, other than Mr. A, who nobody talks about anymore.
But what the big thing here is, we are losing
another
our legends.
Well, I mean, here's the thing with Steve Ditko. This isn't like some tragedy. He's 90 years old. I mean, the man lived a full life as a legend, whether he saw it that way or not.
In secret.
He will probably never know the true influence that he had or where it's going to go. You know what I mean?
I think he knows.
I don't think so. I don't think his brain worked that way. I mean, I don't know.
He didn't care.
But that's my point.
In the nice way, he didn't care.
He probably just really didn't care.
I don't think he even knew, because, again, he didn't care enough to find out. He wouldn't even hear people out. Well, even the dude on the phone talking about how much of, in the BBC special, talking about how much of a legend, how important he was like ready to get off the phone. He's like, okay.
Thanks.
Cool. Yeah, like that wasn't really important to him. It was just the work.
That's what I mean, though.
Yeah.
Like, he's huge to the hippie crowd because of Doctor Strange, but he could care less.
Dirty hippies.
Yeah, right. No, he absolutely. There were times in the Spider-Man, the original run, that he would write in a panel, like, something dirty hippies. And then Stan Lee would go in and change it in favor of the hippies.
Well, Stan Lee's
a hippie.
A hippie.
Hey, now, Steve, let's not offend the hippies.
So, yeah, I mean, this was shocking. You know, it's one of those people you're like, it's Ditko. Like, it was like the legend of Ditko always being talked about.
Yeah.
You knew he was old, but you still thought, yeah, it's Ditko. He's been there our whole lives. Figure, when we got into comics, he was already a legend.
Let's be, because it's not advertised. I mean, you got to think, with Stan Lee, every birthday is a huge deal.
Yeah.
Steve Ditko, on the other hand, when he died, the world didn't know for days.
Weeks.
Days.
It might have been a week. Before, like, it was actually publicized. Like, he died, and most of us didn't know.
He was found on the 29th, but they said he died a few days earlier. That's how much of a recluse he was.
That's my point, though. Whereas Stan, on the other hand, so, I mean, that makes you think about all of those early legends. You know what I mean? We don't talk about them as much because we always keep thinking, all right, Stan Lee's in his 90s.
They're always going to be there. That's why we don't talk about them.
Yeah, it's, you know, this is for us, like, when Walt died, or Walt Disney, everybody thought Walt, like, he's Walt Disney. We see him everywhere. We have Disney World. This is going to be weird in the next few years. Like, the people that created what we...
I don't think it'll be weird. I don't. I don't feel bad, really, about this.
Not bad, but not having a physical living connection to the past of comics anymore is going to be strange.
Well, it'll always be there. The physical connection you want is pick up a book. I mean, his influence is, you can see to this day in Spider-Man comics. In Doctor Strange, well, maybe not Doctor Strange now that he's not Sorcerer Supreme, but that's a whole other problem. But you will still get the Ditko vibe and feel. I mean, hell, look at the MCU. When Spider-Man finally made it after Tobey Maguire, it was Ditko is the reason why.
Yeah.
Because they went back. Because, you know, Ditko was pissed that he ever graduated high school. Ditko was furious. He was like, no, Spider-Man's a high school. Don't make him graduate. That's a terrible idea. That's Steve Ditko, though.
So he just wanted Spider-Man to be Peter Pan.
He wanted him to be Maggie.
Wait. Maggie?
Yeah, from The Simpsons.
Hey, Guy. Welcome. You know what's about to happen.
Guy, and a one,
and a two.
Earth 2! What a wonderful way.
On that note.
What a wonderful way to end the show.
Menti, do that thing.
You can find the show anywhere online at Welcome to Fireside, welcometofireside.com, or at Welcome to Fireside Instagram, Facebook, wherever you go.
Fireside Crew on Twitter.
Yes. Yeah. Or you can also search at Welcome to Fireside. It still pops up.
Cool.
So, yeah, anywhere online. If you like the show, do us a favor, comment. Actually, you know what? Do me a favor. If you're listening to this and you find the post on Instagram or wherever you find it, tell me what your favorite Ditko book was. I want to hear what, when you think of Steve Ditko, what was the most influential aspect of him? Was it Spider-Man? Was it Doctor Strange? Was it Hawk and Dove? Was it Blue Beetle? Who was it for you? Is it The Question?
Mr. A.
Or Mr. A, or you know, Mr. M, as we're going to call him now. So, but yeah, give us a comment, and then, you know, while you're at it, like it and share. All right, once again, I'm Menti.
I'm Features.
I'm Mr. Mauer.
I'm Baby Huey.
Don't forget to check us out on the OG Podcast Network. That's ogpodcastnetwork.com.
Or download the app.
Or download the app. Or go to OG Podcast on Twitter.
Deuces.
Ooh.
What now?
That was, he pulled the trigger fast.
That was.
Says three words the whole show, but he gets his deuces in.
Damn right.
Deuces.